Well, first I must say I'm not an expert in voting systems. I do research in efficient implementations of cryptography. I got caught into this by complete accident. So, and now I can't get out of it. It's impressive. So, this year I coordinated a team who participated into the official testing of the Brazilian voting machines. It was the second edition of these tests. It was the first edition where source code was available to the investigators. My team was composed with three other security network guys who work in the university. Marcelo Caran, André de Miranda, and Felipe Scarel. And I work in the Department of Computer Science. So first I'll give a really short version of my talk, basically two lines of code. Which basically says that you should never see the pseudo-random number generator with the time in seconds. And more importantly, you shouldn't print the time in a public official document. So this is really important. So okay, now to the long version. For some bit of context, Brazilian elections are held either in a majoritarian or proportional way. It depends on the public office being disputed. They are administered, executed, and judged by the Supreme Electoral Court. It's part of the judicial system. And this court is presided by a judge from the Supreme Court. So first of all, you can see that this court concentrates lots of power regarding elections. So they have lots of control over elections. So after rampant ballot fraud in the 70s and 80s, after we had a dictatorship in the 70s, so it's more like the 80s and 90s. Voting became electronic in 1996. But the first time the elections were purely electronic was in the 2000. The first electronic voting was just 30% of the votes. It became purely electronic in 2000. Elections are held in October, which means that next October we have elections. I accept invitations from any place in the world where you can receive me in October. I don't want to be in Brazil in October. And participation is mandatory, which means that we don't have the problem, the usual US problem of voter participation, because you are obliged to. Well, the Brazilian voting machines were claimed to be 100% or absolutely secure for 16 years. The reason for that is they were never really tested. So it's, of course, they are, of course, really secure. The hardware is manufactured by Diebold. We have 500,000 voting machines in operation now. I should have said that we have 140 million registered voters. So it's quite a bunch of people to vote. The software, since 2006, the software is also developed by the Supreme Court. So they have a special section of programmers, and they write the voting software. And in 2008, these are some of the major milestones in the history of this initiative. In 2008, they adopted GNU Linux as the operating system. After we criticized a lot that they were using Windows Compact Edition and also a DOS compatible operating system called Virtuos, which was produced by a Brazilian company. The software executed by the machines is secret, but the inspectors from the political parties can take a look at the source code if they sign an NDA. So in 2002, they experimented with voter-verified paper audit trails for the first time, but the SEC, the Supreme Court just called them the SEC from now on. They alleged that it's too expensive, it has lots of operational difficulties, let's say, so they were suspended in 2003. So it was the only and first time that we had paper audit trails in Brazilian elections. So this is a picture of the Brazilian voting machine. It's a classic DRE voting machine without printed ballots. You can see in the left the election official terminal. It's the terminal used by the election official to input the voter registration number. So everyone has a number. So this sends the number to the voting machine, which authenticates the voter and receives the voter. So everything is just done numerically. That's why it's the interface is simple. It's just like a telephone. We can either vote blank or we can nullify our vote by inputting an invalid number, but it's the only way to make your vote null. This cable here is especially worrisome because it's of course the machine which collects the voter identity is tied to the machine which collects the vote. So it's a common source of criticism to have this cable attaching explicitly the two terminals. And since starting with this election, I guess, or some part of the previous election too, we will identify voters by their fingerprints. So this is a fingerprinting device, which raises all kinds of problems. But I'm just sticking to the software, which runs in this machine, because this was the focus of the penetration tests, which were held, the tests which were held March this year. So let's talk a little bit about the how this occurred, the format of the event first. So this event was split into two phases. They call it the first phase, a preparation phase. All the teams, we were 24 researchers divided into 9 teams participating in these trials. And we were invited for an opening presentation. This was in the beginning of March this year, where they described, they gave an overview of the system, described some of the security features of the system, and et cetera. During this 3-day preparation phase, we could also have access to the source code in a sealed separate room without having to sign NDAs. So that's very cool. We could ask also technical questions, but we had to submit these technical questions and they could be either approved or rejected by the SEC. So just submitting a question was not a guarantee to receive an answer. One important thing is the teams who submitted their inscriptions were not also guaranteed to participate. They had to approve or reject the teams. Fortunately, we were approved. Of course, the objective of this preparation phase was just to formulate hypotheses and to some attack methodologies against the security features of the voting machine. The objective was also to evaluate the software and hardware sides of the machine, but only the voting machine. So the fingerprinting device, for example, was out of scope. Afterwards, 2 weeks later, we had the proper testing phase where we had to put into practice our attack methodologies. At the end of the testing phase, the teams were supposed to jointly write a report with the SEC. So we negotiated and wrote a team report detailing our results and the consequences and et cetera. So it was jointly written. In March 29th, there was a public audience to publicate the results, to make the results public, and to give symbolic prizes as well. And in April 10, all the documents became public, the team reports and the testing plans submitted by all of the teams. And also the SEC published an appreciation. They had a special committee just to evaluate the performance of the teams. They had explicit scoring criteria to compare the performance of different teams. And well, they published this appreciation with the team scores. So our team submitted two testing plans, one attacking ballot secrecy and the other attacking ballot integrity. But we only had time. It was just 3 days to do the whole thing, 10 hours per day, so 30 hours. So we only had time to exercise the ballot secrecy testing plan. So according to the call for participation published by the SEC, the Supreme Court, attacks should aim two goals: to cause a failure, which they define it as a violation of the system specification, which bring the machine to an inconsistent state of execution with no effect on integrity or secrecy of ballots. So it's basically a denial of service attack. And the second class of attacks should aim for fraud, which of course is an intentional act, trying to attack either the integrity or the anonymity of the ballots. Preferably, these attacks shouldn't leave traces. They should be undetectable. So they explicitly defined these two classes of attacks or objectives. And according to the scoring, this, of course, was much more important, had a much more impact than the first one. Okay, so we went to the opening presentation, eager to learn how the whole voting system works in Brazil. This is basically what they presented to us, is the election algorithm. The SEC produces the software. A few days before the elections begin, they distribute this software in memory cards across the whole country. These cards are inserted into the voting machines, which are kept spread around the country. so the software can be installed in the machine's internal memory. On the election day, they print what they call a zero proof, which is a document which supposedly attests that no candidate has votes before the election starts. I say supposedly because, of course, this is only true if the software was not tampered or manipulated anyhow, and if it's correct too. This happens between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. on election day. At 8 a.m., the voting session starts. Of course, the electors can now authenticate themselves and insert the votes, input the votes into the voting machine. At 5 p.m., if there is no one in the queue, the voting session is closed by the election officials. They have to enter a password on the election terminal to formally close the voting session. And when this happens, the voting machine produces a set of files on what they call a media of results. It's an orange pen drive. It's really easy to spot on the field. So this was nicely chosen. So this media of results, all the content of this media of results is transmitted to the centralized totalizator. So this pen drive is inserted into a common desktop machine running custom software to transmit the contents of this pen drive through a private network. This pen drive specifically stores a partial sum, a sum of that specific voting machine, what they call a digital record of votes, which is basically all the votes out of order, in a shuffled order, and the log of all the events happening since the start of the election. Actually, since the software was loaded, so it goes back a few days. So the totalizator picks all of these files, the partial sums specifically, verify their signatures, and add the whole all of the files to get the official result. As I said already, only the voting machines were evaluated during these tests, although I think that attacking the totalizator could have some interesting effects. What they say is the official position of the SEC is if you successfully attack the totalizator, what you can do at most is delay the publication of results, because all the partial sums are published in the internet, so anyone can do an independent count or independent summation. But I think that a successful attack to any component of the system raises some questions into the competence and the authority of the SEC to conduct the elections. So I don't think it's that simple. So during the opening talk, the first morning of the tests, they explicitly presented the security features of this digital record of the votes. So this file replaced the paper audit trails we had in 2002. Because of all the operational difficulties, they decided by law that we should only have a purely electronic device to allow independent counting of the votes. Of course, this doesn't allow independent verification of results, because this file is produced by the same software which collects the votes, so it makes no sense. And it stores the votes in shuffled order. So the file is split into different sections, each section for each public office position on that election. So for example, governor, senator, and president. And let's suppose that the first voter casts these choices. Each choice is selected randomly from this one of these sections. A position is chosen, and the vote is stored. So the first voter could vote like this. The second could nullify his vote for senator because he doesn't like the candidates, and vote like that. And there it goes. An important thing is at the end of the voting session, the file still conserves the empty positions. So if someone did not vote, if n voters did not vote, you should have n empty positions per section. So the empty positions are conserved. This is really important. Well, during the preparation phase, the opening talk, I thought that this could be a nice thing to start the attacking, to start the attacks. So since I saw this, I jokingly say that my spidey sense started tingling. Because my surname is Spider in Portuguese, so it's... And I was nicknamed Spider-Man by the SEC. This was caught on tape, cool. So after watching the opening talk, we immediately raised the hypothesis that the DRV was not designed and implemented in a secure way, which immediately raises some interesting questions, like if it's possible to simulate the order in the votes were stored out of the machine, preferably after the voting happened, if it's possible to recover the votes in order using the simulated order, and which information is needed for this recovery. So basically this, of course, everyone here is familiarized with this, but still wanted to make the talk self-contained. So the positions in that file are selected by sampling a pseudo-random number generator. Of course, you all know what it is. And we all know that we need a specific parameter called the seed to be truly random, so we get a proper sequence of pseudo-random numbers, which appear to be random, but are deterministically generated by the seed. After 1 hour of source code analysis by just randomly, recursively searching for knowingly insecure functions, we already were almost completely sure that the DRV was not designed and implemented in a secure way. So we only needed 1 hour of source code analysis for that. This was already the second day. We couldn't see the source code on the first day because one team got exclusive access to the sealed room on the first day. In total, we had 5 hours of source code analysis because it was a small room with just four computers. We had to alternate inside the rooms. We had 9 teams. So between the preparation phase and the testing phase, we wrote a simple analysis tool aiming to recover the devotes in order. It's just 133 lines of source code. Most of it is just formatting the output. And we proposed this methodology to the SEC. The SEC would produce a secret list of votes. Our team is split into 2 sub-teams, which I'll call A and B. Sub-team A would jointly insert the secret list of votes into the voting machine. The list was kept secret from the sub-team B. We actually went out of the room just to make sure that no baseball code was used to exchange votes among the 2 parts of the team. And then after all the votes were inserted, sub-team A would go out of the room, sub-team B would come back and run the analysis to try to recover the votes in order. After the program ran instantaneously, was really quick, and then we printed the list, a supposed list of votes in order, and then everyone would go together and verify that all of the, if both lists were identical or not. Of course, the success criteria is if the lists are identical, then we have a successful attack. So on the first day of the testing phase, we could exercise a proof of concept up to 21 electors. We started with 10, then they would ask us to repeat the attack with more electors. And then at the first day, we stopped it at 21. At the end of the first day, they said, well, it seems you have something. You should try with realistic numbers. So they suggested that we should try 475 voters, which corresponds to some metric in the previous elections. So we took 2 hours and a half just to input all these votes, to simulate all these votes. And I got a really quick typer in the voting machine. It still took 2 hours and a half and 3 hours to verify that both lists were correct. So this took quite a long time. The simulated election were for 2 different positions, so we had 950 votes to recover for mayor and something else, governor, I guess. So how could we do this? Well, there is a progression of vulnerabilities. The first one was the PRNG used is really weak. It has a small seed space. It's the fairly well-known SRAND and RAND family of functions. And of course, it does not attain any cryptographic requirements. So this was the first problem, which we found by just looking, searching recursively by this function. It was one of the first things we did when we got access to the source code. Fortunately, we had a terminal to look for things in the code. It seems that when inspectors from the political parties go there, they don't have a terminal. They only have a read-only version in a browser. So they have to go file per file to search for interesting things. Of course, the choice of seed was not truly random. It was just a time measurement with the resolution of seconds. And this clearly already violates the operation limits of the PRNG because the seed must be truly random. This also reduces significantly the cost of exhaustive search. One thing I didn't say is since the file has the empty positions, you can try a potential seed and simulate the storage of N votes and see if the empty positions match in your file and in the target file. If they match, probably you get the right seed. So this reduces the cost of this exhaustive search. And this time measurement was taken at the initialization of the voting software, which happens between 7 and 8 a.m. So the space here is already 3,600 different seats. So, but not this was not enough. They had to make the seed public. So it was printed in the public product. The zero proof contains the seed. And so there is no need for any exhaustive search. So it's constant time. So let's... this is a zero proof, an example of a zero proof from a previous election. This is the secret and truly random seed. I opted to put the red circle, so it's not too hard to find. So this allows directly a direct attack, which will recover the public seed, and well, simulate the storage of the votes and recover them in order. But you, if you somehow cannot access the public seed, which is public, you can run an exhaustive search on those 3,600 seeds and see if the holes match, the empty positions match. And then recover the correct seed and perform the direct attack. Well, the attack is fairly efficient. It's deterministic, no chance of error. It's exact. It ran instantaneously. It's really simple. It's elegant. We didn't have to change or invade the security perimeter of anything. We just replicated a portion of the source code, basically the collision handling function to store the votes into that file. And because of this, the attack is essentially untraceable. We are only reading public products of an election. We are not changing a single byte in anything. So our results were, it's possible to recover the votes in order from the public seed. It's also possible to recover the seed from the votes out of order. So we defeated the only protection implemented in the voting machine for ballot secrecy. Afterwards, we found, after the testing phase was done and our report was already written, we found that the log file also stores the timestamp each vote was cast. So, of course, this has no impact on security, so it's not a problem. We suggested several corrections. For example, to use a hardware RNG to generate a proper seed for a secure PRNG, or use a, if there is enough bandwidth, just use the hardware RNG to find these positions. The voting machine has two hardware RNGs. Neither of them was used for this. It has an AMD Geode processor, which has an instruction to generate a small random, I think a 32-bit random number. And the voting machine also has some of the voting machines, I think half of them, have a hardware security module, a small hardware security module inside of them, which run some of the cryptographic primitives. So it has a hardware RNG as well. I don't know how these RNGs are used, because they should be used for this, but they were not. If somehow this doesn't work, we also suggested to use DevRandom. This is hard to tell if it's viable in practice, because we know that calls to read data from this device are get blocked if there is not enough entropy in the operating system. And we know that voting systems have, the operating system does not have really random events happening to obtain entropy. Everything is really predictable. Like the same software is run at the same sequence on everything on election day. So it's not clear if this is viable or not. This requires more study. If it's a problem in practice, we also suggested to use the non-blocking random device node. But of course, you lose cryptographic strength, so I'm not sure this is secure in practice. So if they have a processor with an instruction to generate numbers, they should stick to the first solution to solve this. So let's go a little bit beyond and study the consequences. Let's suppose an attacker which is capable of buy votes and monitoring or coercing votes on voters on election day. This is not, a non-important issue in Brazil. We have so much problems with voter coercion that we even have a proper name for it in Portuguese. So this happened historically for a long time. So this is really critical, especially in the context of Brazil, on the poor neighborhoods or the poor cities. So these vulnerabilities directly allow four kinds of general attacks against ballot secrecy. The first one is the attacker records the order or time votes were cast. and then he can recover these votes. Another option is to pick the block of coerced electors and tell them to vote at the session start, because we know that the first positions of that file are have the votes which were bought by the attacker. Another option is to choose an elector to cast a marker vote, for example, everything zeroed. So the coerced voters would start after this marker vote. So if it's hard somehow to get early at the voting place, you can use a marker vote and still recover the votes of those coerced electors. And the last one is just tell the coerced electors to vote in prearranged positions or time. So if an attacker, for example, he really likes prime numbers, he could tell the voters to vote in prime positions in the voting queue, and then just select the prime positions to recover their votes. And a different attack, a directed attack on ballot secrecy, by, for example, if you pick an influential person in Brazil, the press probably published the time and place this person went to the voting place. So you could, by this information, recover this specific vote. And curiously, on the past elections, the Supreme Court of Elections published the time and vote the president of the SEC voted. So there is no technical obstacle to recover his vote alone, which is kind of interesting. Of course, I won't try doing it. But after the initial repercussions of this, before the testing phase ended, somehow the progress we had leaked into the press. So the press started writing things about our progress. And initially, the SEC said that we provided extremely positive contribution. Our attack was highly advanced, which is, I don't know if I should be happy or not to receive this compliment. They say that they learned a lot with the testing methodologies, not only by our team, but other teams too. And they say that they will ask for our help from academia in the next 2 years. They even suggested that we should drop our jobs and work for the Supreme Court of Elections, which I, of course, refused. So after these initial repercussions on the April 10th, they published the report, the official report done by the evaluation committee, which was appointed by the SEC. And they qualified our attack in an attempt to cause failure in the voting machines and not fraud, which lowered our scores significantly. And another thing was they had a scoring criteria, and the more intervention points you had, the lower was your score. They called the intervention point anything you have to intervene to obtain something. So they said that we needed physical access to the voting machine, of course, because we needed to simulate an election. I can't vote without touching on the voting machine. They also said that we need access to the media, of course, to recover the files which are made public after the elections. So in the testing room, the only way to pick these files was to violate the seal and retrieve this media of results. And also we were punished because we looked at the source code, which is really interesting because they provide access to the source code and then lower your score afterwards because you looked at it. So at the end, our score was 0.0313 in a range between 0 and 400. My hypothesis is, since 313 is a palindromic prime number, they thought that we would be really happy to receive this score. But this was not true. So, and I how can I fail a student now? Like, I'm a professor, I failed miserably on this test. I can't grade tests anymore. So we had 5 hours to look at the source code. We didn't find only this problem. Of course, any code base which has this kind of problems doesn't have only this problem. So we found several other flaws. So for example, as you saw, an inadequate source of entropy. This is actually a 17-year-old vulnerability. It was, as far as I know, firstly detected by Goldberg and David Wagner in Netscape 1.1 when they were PhD students. So. Also, each voting machine in their internal memory and also in the flashcards which have the voting software, there is an encrypted partition to store the sensitive data, like the signing private keys and the voting software. So all of the voting machines, the 500,000 voting machines, share the same encryption key. And this key was available in the source code, which means that it goes in plain text to the binaries in the voting software. It's available to anyone if you know where to look at. Also, they use the AES. This was not that bad. They use AES 256 in CBC mode, but they also use the same initialization vector in all of the voting machines. It's also present in the source code. They have several software-only integrity verifications to try to detect if the voting software was changed before the cards were sent across the country and the voting software was installed in the voting machines. And these integrity checks had actually three functions to verify the integrity of three different classes of files. And we found out that the function call, which verified the dynamic libraries, the shared libraries in the Linux operating system, was simply commented out. So they were not checking a significant part of the software. They also used SHA-1 for computing digital signatures and verifying hashes for the software integrity verification, when we obviously know that SHA-1 doesn't provide you collision resistance. So the justification they gave for that is, since SHA-1 produces short hashes, it's easy for a human to verify. But of course, you can use a stronger hash function and simply truncate the output. And also, they have repeated implementations of the same cryptographic primitives across the whole code base, which makes verifying that all of these implementations are correct or were not tampered a really engineering nightmare. You have to check all these different places with code copied and pasted from random sources, so it's really hard to verify that all the crypto was done right. Well, was not done right, as you saw, but our reading of this situation is that these flaws were caused by a flawed software development process. So during our interaction, and by hearing their assumptions on what a voting system should provide, it became obvious that they have too much emphasis on obfuscation instead of security. So the focus is really on external attackers instead of internal attackers, when I think that insiders are present a way higher risk. There was no evidence that they do internal security exercises or they provide formal training to the programmers working in this software. Also, in the machines which presented the source code, we could find the SVN logs, so usernames, passwords, and the host names in the network for the voting software repository were available. So we could simply get those and try to, any investigator could capture those and try something later. So this is, of course, non-recommended. And also, it seems they don't have any kind of static code analysis. I experimented just as a test to run the flaw finder program. Is a really primitive static code analysis on my Anaxis 2. And it raised already a huge warning when it found the srand function call by saying that this function is not sufficiently secure. Another worrisome issue is they keep repeating that the system is absolutely secure by a combination of human and technical cryptographic measures. And so I think that they repeat this so much that they start believing it. So there is a measurable, you can feel it, a false sense of security among the team of programmers working in this software. So maybe this is the most worrisome of everything I spoke. I don't think this is a proper environment to write mission-critical software. So after all of this happened, I gave some opinions in the press, and the SEC provided their view of the events. This is, of course, they responded in Portuguese, so this is my translation. I did my best to capture what they were trying to say. So I complained about all half a million voting machines sharing the same key, which could be leaked just once, and simultaneously all of the voting software and results from all the voting machines become available. So what they say that using a single shared key is more secure due to cryptanalytic attacks based on statistical estimators, whatever that is. Regarding the internal attacks, they say that it's not practical to execute an insider attack without leaving traces detectable by an audit conducted by internal agents. So the problem is reduced to itself. Like, You have audits executed by, conducted by humans to verify that other humans are not behaving maliciously. So my criticism is what they were trying to say with these statistical estimators, I think, is encrypting the same plain text with different keys could leak something about the plain text. But so that's why they use the same shared key. There are some attacks based on that with only academic interest, with really expensive complexity. Of course, leaking the shared key just once has a much higher impact. And this doesn't happen if you properly use the CBC mode of operation. If you choose your initialization vector properly in a random way, this shouldn't happen. So this could only be a problem because they are not using the block cipher as they should use the block cipher. And in my opinion, the argument only reinforces the focus on external attacks. They are much more worried about some statistical leaking of the plain text instead of worrying about leakage of cryptographic keys. So I remember an XKCD comic, which is basically, probably you saw this too. The crypto nerd starts to collect money to be the super computer to try to crack RSA with a really high security level. Probably Rivas can estimate the cost of this attack later. But what really happens is you just buy a cheap wrench and hit the guy until he spits the password. So it seems they are worried about this when they should worry about this. Regarding the paper audit trails, they say that obtaining absolute ballot secrecy and integrity is essentially impossible. I think this is a rephrasing of the argument by Rebecca Mercury. So it doesn't make sense to focus on integrity only. So what they focus really is on the secrecy only. And the vote is secret even for each voter. So we have no way to tell if our votes were collected and computed, counted correctly. So they say that paper audit trails only give a false and expensive sense of security, arguing that a correctable software vulnerability, they were referring to the problem we found, requires reintroducing paper audit trails is a threat to democracy. So I didn't take this personally. My criticism is this is a classical example of the fallacy of the perfect solution. Since you can get absolutely secure, two absolutely secure properties, you just give priority to one and forget about the other, when there is, of course, heuristical solutions which may not be optimal but sufficiently good. And I wonder if it's really better to trust demonstrably vulnerable software produced by a flawed development process than trying to study this problem deeply and trying to solve it in practice. So I get really impressed that after such a long time, some common sense from the security area is still not being applied. So for example, the Kirchhoff principle and the Shannon's maxim, which assume that the attacker knows everything about the system and obfuscation is not enough. And I couldn't resist to but quote the famous phrase by John von Neumann, that anyone who considers arithmetical methods for producing random digits is, of course, in a state of sin. So I have to thank my team of Brave researchers. They got a chunk of the flak because of this, and they resisted bravely. I have to thank the EVT Vote 2012 organizers for inviting me. It's an honor to be here. And I also have to thank the Supreme Electoral Court to increase the transparency a little bit. If they didn't do this, if they didn't realize these tests, I wouldn't be here and could not talk about it, about all of these issues. And I didn't have to sign an NDA, so I can talk about anything I found there. So this is really nice. So thank you for your attention. I can answer questions. We are finishing a report. The report will be made available in Portuguese and English in my website, so you can go later there, just a few days later, or get or send me an email and I can provide a copy of the report. So thank you very much.
So thank you very much. A lot of what you said sounded very familiar because in the United States, we went through kind of the same analysis of Diebold machines here about six, 7 years ago. And what the particular question that came to my mind is that the vulnerability that you discovered of the cryptographic key being used in common for all the machines in the country and being present in the source code and in the object code, that of course was found in the United States Diebold machines as well. I think it was discovered by Jones
initially.
Jones.
Okay,
all right. So my question is, have you compared what you discovered about the Diebold systems in Brazil with those in the United States, and is that crypto key the same between the two countries?
Well, it's probably not the same because the algorithm was different. And, well, I don't know the whole encryption key. I just, inside the seal room, they explicitly said that we couldn't get inside the seal room without any memory device other than our brains. We could still get inside with our brains. So I only memorized the first bytes of this key to look for it in the binaries afterwards. But anyway, we didn't have time to really look for it and try to mount an attack against Belut integrity. So, but of course, some of the mistakes are repeated. I extensively cite the Diebold studies in our report because several of the problems are exactly the same in just a different context, but which means that the ones responsible for the elections in Brazil are not keeping track of what's happening in the voting area because they're repeating not only 17-year-old vulnerabilities but also problems found in other voting systems. Thank you.
Yeah, it's the same key but translated into Portuguese. I'm Pam Smith, I'm president of Verified Voting, and it's an advocacy organization that works on these issues, and I had a curiosity as to whether there are similar organizations that you know of that are active in Brazil.
Well, it's there are some experts studying and criticizing and trying to follow the systems, but it's really a frustrating task because everyone, for some reason, trusts the system, like, absolutely. So probably because in the room session, I'll talk a little bit more about this. But since we had rampant fraud using paper ballots, and these machines came as a kind of saviors of our democracy, something like that, and we don't have extensive evidence of fraud for 16 years, people started to think that we really had a good system. And the SEC does its part saying that it's the most advanced system in the world, that more than 60 representatives from more than 60 countries came to Brazil to know our system. They never say that no other country adopted our system, but they say that they visited to know it. So they make lots of propaganda saying that the system is really advanced and for somehow it should be trusted. So, but we have some experts, some not a well-formed entity. Probably we will start having those because the problem is getting more widespread. I hope so. So, but it's still a very frustrating task in Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the talk. That was fantastic. I have two questions, if the audience will permit. The first was, you mentioned your team took a lot of flack for the participation. Can you go into any more detail about that? Are people under any kind of pressure that you know the rest of the world should be worried about?
First of all, we didn't get any explicit pressure, but we got some readings from some of the positions which made us become worried. But we had flack from these kinds of positions saying that essentially what we were saying didn't make sense. Of course, the average Brazilian cannot tell the difference between something said by the Supreme Electoral Court or us. They don't have the education to have an opinion on this. So it was mostly through the press. So specifically, I got most of the flag because I represent the team. And these interviews and statements were always a problem because, well, they were not understood. And for some reason, again, when we experts, we simply give statements, precise statements, quantitatively evaluating what we found. These are not taken as seriously as a simply authoritarian statement saying that, oh, the system is secure, don't worry. One thing, for example, that they said was, well, the system was secure, now they found a problem, we will fix it, so it's secure again, which doesn't make any sense. So, and people buy into these arguments for some reason. So this was mostly the problems I had so far. I expect to not have further problems with more serious issues.
So did your team have a name?
Well, they call us the Spider-Man and the Noobies.
Ah.
So I was Spider-Man, the others were the Noobies for some reason. when essentially they helped me a lot. So they were not experts in voting software, but as you saw, or in software security either, but as you saw, the flaws were really simple. So they had the right mindset to work on this topic. So
maybe you should have called yourselves the Supreme Electoral Assessors or something like that.
Yeah, maybe for the next time.
Yeah.
There are rumors that they will conduct tests again on the beginning of next year after the elections pass, of course. Maybe next year we will have more trials. I don't know in which conditions, and maybe we will show up to
have some fun. That was my second question, was going to be, what would you change about the test criteria the next time if they're going to be repeating this again and again? How would you redesign the experiment?
Yes, of course, just inviting. In this case, it was not an invitation. They just published a call of participation. Anyone who got the inscription approved could participate. Just receiving these people, showing the software, and fixing whatever problems they find is not a good way to do secure mission-critical software. So in our report, we asked them to not have a really strict time length. It was just 3 days. We want a really extensive time. Some tools to automate searching problems in the software. To make the software available to the investigators in any time during the year, so we can go there and see if things are being done correctly. A problem with this study by the inspectors from the political parties is they can look at the source code, but the source code keeps changing. So everyone just go on the last week to see what's there, because it doesn't make sense to go at the beginning of this window where you can look at the source code, because it will change. So they just let's leave it for the next last week, and then we can try to look something on the last week. So we suggest several improvements to this event, or even to install some kind of really scientific evaluation process, so we can participate in making this software secure, but I'm not too optimistic.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your great talk today.
Thank you.
You mentioned you were one of 9 teams, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Do you know anything about what the other 8 teams found?
Some of the teams started with interesting clues. One other team was exactly on the same trail, but they didn't have the time to complete to explore the same vulnerability. They found it, but they, for some reason, they couldn't go until the end. I guess it was simply they were undergrads, if I'm not mistaken. So they didn't have the experience, or they felt the pressure. Some interesting things I didn't speak about. We were in a room inside the Supreme Electoral Court. We were being videotaped all of the time. We were being monitored all of the time. There was always someone passing through the tables to look at what everyone was doing. If we wanted to speak privately, we had to go out of the room and speak, because, well, I don't think that this is a good way to conduct the tests. One thing we were really worried between the first and the second day was if they figured out which vulnerability we were targeting, they could fix the software between the first and the second day, and we couldn't tell we could tell that the software was fixed, but we couldn't show anymore that that there was some vulnerability. So we also had to dissimulate a lot to hide what we discovered, what we were trying to explore. So everything we did was, if we wanted to ask a question, we would ask other questions just to shuffle our good question among the others. So we had to dissimulate a lot, because we couldn't trust that they would not fix the software from the first to the second day. And when they increased the number of voters significantly, we got worried that they could fix the software and show that, well, it only works as a proof of concept, not with realistic scenario. So we had to take out all of these careful measures. But the other teams, one of them tried to mess with the initialization of the software, with the booting process, something like this. But all of them got interesting results, but could not progress further because of the time restriction. So, and some other teams just couldn't find anything and concluded that the system was secure. Thank you for your question. Any more questions?
Enormous contrast between that and the top-to-bottom review for Deborah Bowen in California, where you took weeks and
Yes.
You had everything you needed, documentation, systems, software.
And that was just the NDA summit.
That was, yes.
Yeah, we just had grep, vi, cat, the usual Unix command lines, but it was enough. So, but yes, we would love to have 60 days to work freely on this. We couldn't, but we would love to.
5 hours is ridiculous.
Do you anticipate that's feasible? Do you think that they might allow our service?
I'm not optimistic too. Like they really, some of the first positions by the SEC made public were that our attack would not work in practice because the software is secret. So they don't have any intent in making the software available. Even if the software is not secret, because we know that the inspectors from the political parties can somehow look at the source code. So they really, in my opinion, they rely the software being secret to design the security measures, which is a big mistake. But that's why I don't think they will give us a significant period of time to test some other more sophisticated attacks.
The political parties that had an opportunity to look at the system previously under the NDA, did they participate in the testing in any way, or did they raise any issues that they had discovered previously after this analysis, or was there anything, were they happy mm-hmm. with everything when they saw it or not, and were they able to raise any problems after this testing process went forward?
Okay, interesting question. We have a single party which explicitly opposes the use of electronic voting, especially in these models in Brazil. Because one representative of this party lost an election in, I think, the end of the 80s. So they got really, they don't trust the system. So they started making vocal criticisms. They already did this before this test, but they continued doing it now with evidences, with material evidences. But this is one out of 39 parties in Brazil. In Brazil, we had 39 parties with widely different sizes. So I don't know about other parties. I didn't see anything really really materialized because of the NDAs. And so they are under NDAs. They can't speak about it. Otherwise, they have to respond to legal problems. So I don't think anyone will discuss anything they saw. But it's a problem that if they saw something and if someone made use of a vulnerability to, I don't know, to impact the results of previous elections, no one knows because everyone is under an NDA.
Doesn't that also raise a problem that if somebody discovers a vulnerability, they could exploit it to their own benefit?
Yes, and no one would know, yes.
Nobody ever complains about that?
Yes. It is. Well, they complain, but then the SEC judges these cases. So they just say, no, our voting system is secure. This complaint is invalid. So they execute and they judge the processes. So it's up to them. That's the problem. We don't have a proper separation between these two tasks. So they administer and execute elections and also judge any kind of process. So it's a problem there. Thank you.
So I can't resist extrapolating from the electoral court's insistence that you keep increasing the number of voters that you demonstrate this flawed. Uh-huh. Are they now claiming that, well, yes, you could do it for 475 voters, but for 100 million, it's totally out of the question?
Well, they didn't try this, but in the field, each voting machine would handle at most 500 or something. So they didn't ask us to. I think they were fairly convinced that we were not. We had a real attack, so even with just 475. So we lost a full day just working on that. That's why we didn't have the time to. And well, we felt that we should do this in front of them, and everyone stopped what they were doing because we started to tally the votes in like loudly. Vote number 275, vote is 73, and yes. So this, everyone had to stop what they're doing because something odd was happening. So that's how, I think that's how it leaked to the press, because someone there leaked what was happening to the press. But that was a limitation. They kept us busy for a whole day.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
So if the vulnerabilities that you found scored a 0.0313, what exactly would have been a 400?
Well, you have to, that's a good question. So I don't remember the formula. The formula was devised to apply penalties and not to. So, for example, each intervention point, as they call, applied a quadratic penalty into the formula. That's how the score gets low really quickly. So you had to find a vulnerability which was country-wise, which had an impact in the whole country, you couldn't have any intervention points, so you had to find the vulnerability without looking, for example, at the source code, because just looking at the source code gets you a penalty. What else? So they had four criteria. You had to do absolutely perfect in these four criteria to get 400. So we had 0.03. We got the first place. I didn't say it, but we got the first place. Second place was 0.02. And third place was 0.01. It was really like a tight match, yes.
So why don't they have a vote to write a hardware-compatible open source stack and replace it and have everyone read the source and then everyone gets the penalty?
I'm not sure if I understood the question. You mean replacing the voting software with an open source alternative?
Yeah, replace the whole software stack with something that works.
Okay, yeah, this is interesting, but still we have the problem of making sure that the software everyone saw is the software running on the machines on election day. So this could help, but this is not any guarantee, a formal mathematical guarantee of security. You still have the problem, how can you tell that that software is the same software as you saw in your house, for example? So this is a problem in principle. And well, if I don't trust them to make secure software, I can't trust them to put the correct software in the voting machines. So yeah, but then they have access to the TPM, and probably we don't. So it's I'm worried about this could help, but I think this is not resistant to insider attacks still. Someone with insider access or really detailed knowledge of the system could still mount attacks, in my opinion. That this could work, but I still think that we need paper of the trails in order to independently verify the results still. So of course you don't have only to install the paper of the trails. If you have better software, this is better too. So improving the system should go both ways, I guess. So replacing with a better software, but also allowing people to verify that there was fraud. That's the problem. We don't have any way to find if there was or not fraud in the elections. That's the main problem. Any other questions? Feel free. We can turn the camera off and then. Okay, thank you very much.